You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
And unfortunately, Susie can't join us today due to some prior obligations, but we have a reoccurring guest here.
Hey, everybody. It's Mike O'May. I'm back.
Thank you for joining us once again, good sir. We are here to finish out our month of second chance movies. This is episode 108, Night of the Demons. We finally got it on the show. It's from 1988. It's an hour and 30 minutes, directed by Kevin Tenney, I think is his last name. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong.
Yeah.
We would know him from Witchboard 1 and 2, particularly. Then Witch Trap, The Cellar, Pinocchio's Revenge, Arrival 2, and Bigfoot. So let's go around the table and see what everyone thinks of this Halloween classic. Mike, as you're our guest, it's customary we start with you. What are your thoughts?
I have a long, sordid history with Night of the Demons that I'll kind of spread out through this conversation about the movie, but I discovered it when I was eight, when I was way too young to kind of be watching it. And it did a lot of damage, warped my mind. Looking back on it, it's hilarious to anybody else that's listening. But I loved it. I love it now. I watched it with like critical eyes about 3 days ago. I had a really bad headache and I was kind of not able to enjoy it with the rose tinted glasses that I usually have on. And it's not a good movie. Like the acting is horrible. The production is pretty bad, but I still love it. So it's one of those kind of movies.
Oh, absolutely. Maurice, what about you? What are your thoughts?
I was late to the game with this movie. I've only saw it for the first time, I think, within the last two or three years.
Oh, wow.
Well, you know, I wasn't able to watch these movies when I was a kid. No. Actually, my parents used to put on horror films all the time. So I very well may have watched this, not knowing. But I never sat down and watched it until a couple years ago. You know, because I'm a poser. Anyways, much like Mike said, I enjoy the movie. I mean, story wise, it's not that great. The acting's bad, but it's all fun. You know, I could sit. You know, if you can sit and watch it and enjoy it and not get bored, you know, it's you can't really say it's a bad movie, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah. The music was pretty good with Bauhaus.
Yep.
In the one scene.
Got a great soundtrack.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I wanted you to comment on it, Maurice, but it's really, really good.
Mm-hmm. No, it is. That's probably one of the better parts of the movie. Yeah. I could not stand Sal and Stooge. I just wanted to jump through the TV and just rip their eyeballs out. And unfortunately, unfortunately, it's not one of those things where like they're acting so good that I hate them. They just suck.
Oh, come on. You didn't like Sal's Guido stereotype?
No, it was pretty bad. That was definitely high school level drama club.
Maurice kind of touched upon something. I've never noticed it until now, and it drove me nuts when I was watching it. They're all stereotyped characters.
Oh yeah.
And in real life, none of them would be friends.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Let alone going to a party together.
To a party.
So, yeah, like if there's this high school like stereotype USA where there's like the greasers. I guess they're high school kids. I don't know, because Linnea Quigley looks like she's 45.
Well, because one of the things was she said that she doesn't know why they wanted to hire her because she was too old at the time
yeah.
to play a teenager.
Yeah.
I don't think she was 45, but
she
definitely was in her 20s.
I think she was early 30s.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I think at that point, I mean, you know, she had been in Hollywood for a while, so.
Yeah.
She was definitely aged out of the role.
I love Linnea Quigley, but there wasn't a lot of tread left on the tires at that point.
Exactly.
There's a jock, a greaser, a punk, a bimbo, a surfer dude, virginal girl. Like, it's all of, like, slasher
stereotypes. It's the Breakfast Club.
It is.
Yeah. It really is.
Except the Breakfast Club in a bad movie.
Yeah.
Oh man. But you guys are right. Well, they would not have been friends.
No, and I mean, Sal was only there because he was trying to get in Judy's pants. So mm-hmm. I mean, he wasn't even invited to the party. But
right,
we'll get into that.
But overall, you're a fan?
Yeah. Oh yeah, I enjoy this movie. I've actually seen it. Since the first time, I've seen it a couple times now.
Yeah.
Good. I'll probably go see it, you know, if you get the time off. When it plays next month, so.
Oh, we already got the tickets, so yeah.
Oh, you got the tickets already for Night of the Demons?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Me and Sam made a deal. I told her that I requested off for the rest of the terror season, because I had to miss all of August, unfortunately, because of my work. But I put in ahead of time for the rest of the season. And she was like gung-ho ready to buy all the tickets right then and there. And I'm like, well, let's wait till we know how many people we have. I said, but for stage fright, I was like, I'll pick them up this time. I said, me and Maurice can square up later. And then she was like, all right, well, then I'm getting Night of the Demons right now. So she bought the Night of the Demons tickets for us.
Oh, nice.
So we're all good for that.
You guys go to the first show or the second show?
First show.
We're too old to go to the second.
If you can make it, Mike, let me know for stage fright, because I'll grab the other. There was at least one or two more seats in our row, so I'll just grab a ticket for it, and you know, this way we're all in the same row.
Is Night of the Demons booked up, you think?
I haven't checked, but I can find out what row we're in for that too.
Let me know.
Will do. But yeah, it's I really do like this movie. Much like Maurice, I was later to the party, but not as late. I was about 12 or 13 when I saw this. I was surprised I didn't see it when it first came out, like so many other 80s horror movies. But quite honestly, when I saw the box art as a kid, it freaked me out. Like, I was like, I don't know what that's about. I don't want to know what that's about. Like, it freaked me out. Much like Evil Dead 2. It took me forever to watch Evil Dead 2 because the skull with the eyeballs freaked me out on the VHS cover art. But I eventually rented it. I remember renting it from Blockbuster, and like, I think I said this on Creepyhead, or maybe it was off the air, but, I remember vividly playing Strider for Sega Genesis and, watching this movie like on the same weekend. So I believe I rented that game along with this, but me and my sister watched it and I loved it. There is a particular scene that still gives me the shivers, that it's just creepy. It's when Angela is kind of floating down the hallway, even though, you know, she just has roller skates on her feet and is just kind of sliding down the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that scene of her, of like demon Angela floating down the hall, used to just give me the creeps, because I had a long hallway leading back to my bedroom as a kid. And if I had to use the bathroom in the middle of the night, like, I'd have to go out into the dark hallway and down the hall to the other end to go to the bathroom. And I would always get this, like, creeped out thought about her gliding down the hallway toward me. So it still affected me, even at, like, 12 or 13. But, yeah, it's a great film. It's one of my Halloween staples. I watch it every year around Halloween. It's just a lot of dumb fun. I honestly also really enjoy the remake. I know a lot of people hate the remake. I think it's a lot of fun. It's dumb. Great soundtrack on that one too. But I have a soft spot for parties gone wrong horror movies. Anytime you can have like a group of teens at a party and something breaks the party up, I always have fun with it. So
what about the sequels?
You know, I've never actually seen part three. I've seen part two and I enjoyed it.
You can stop at part two.
Part three was one of those ones I've meant to watch forever and I've just never gotten around to it. And, I haven't heard good things, so I was also really not high up on my list. But yeah, part two I liked. In fact, a couple years back when this came out, I want to say it was either Amazon or Netflix. One of the two had it up for streaming, and I watched it. They had the sequel as well, and they only had part two. So that was the first time I watched part two was as an adult. And I had fun with it. Like I wouldn't say that it's anywhere on the same level as this one. It's nowhere near as enjoyable, but it's definitely fun. And what's her name? The chick who plays Angela, Amelia Kincaid. She comes back for all three, right? I know she was in.
Yes, she does. She's kind of like the franchise player.
Okay, that's what I thought.
So, before we dive in, can you guys hear me okay? Because I'm calling you from Niagara Falls today. I've been sitting in the bus station. My car broke down, and I've been asking everybody for $2 to get a ride back to Rochester. But everybody in Niagara Falls is an asshole about that for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, you were the asshole that asked me earlier.
Oh, God.
I purposely covered myself in, like, some grease to make myself look extra hobo-ish. So maybe you'd feel bad for me. I really need to go home to Rochester and see my family.
And you just need that $2, not for drugs.
Yeah, it's for that bus ticket. It's a straight shot down 104. They take you home.
Oh, nice callback.
Yeah.
It's always Rochester, by the way. It's never Buffalo. It's always Rochester.
Yeah, we have the same scam in Rochester. Everybody's got to go home to Buffalo.
Oh, that cracks me up.
I had a really, really quick story. Our goth club in Rochester is this place called Vertex. And I was going there one night. It was pretty late already. And I couldn't find it because it wasn't like on a main drag. You had to like drive through some parking lots. It was like a back alley kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this guy just walking down the street. And I'm like, hey, you know where it is? He's like, yeah, it's over here. And he was like, hey, my car broke down. Can you give me some? I was like, yeah, sure. And then I went and parked and going to the club. And he's in the club getting drunk with the money that I just gave him. And he gave me this look like, whatever. It reminded me of that when you guys brought that whole story up. Cracked me up.
That's freaking awesome. But speaking of goth, I do have to say this. I do attribute Angela's dance sequence to my early interest in goth girls as a young teenager.
We'll get there. I'll chime in. Don't worry.
But yeah, so let's jump into the cast. We have Stooge, played by Hal Heavens, who we would also know from Sorority Babes and Slimeball Bolarama, which we will have on this show. Mark my words.
Sorry.
Buckle up, Maurice. but also Elf, Witch Trap, Mad TV, he was in Fear the Walking Dead, and one of my favorite live-action Adult Swim shows, Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell. Then Helen, played by Allison Barron. She was in Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge, Beverly Hills Body Snatchers, Fear, Quantum Leap, Patriot Games, Melrose Place, and Married with Children. And we have Roger, played by Alvin Alexis, The Wiz, The Brother from Another Planet, 21 Jump Street, and For Love or Money. Then Sal, played by Billy Gallo. This guy's actually been in a ton of television, but he was in St. Elsewhere, Who's the Boss, Married with Children, Murder, She Wrote, we got one, NYPD Blue, ER, a bunch of CSIs, both New York, Miami, a couple others. He's in Cold Case, Days of Our Lives. Like, I only wrote down a handful of his, but he's got a lot of television credits. Judy was played by Kathy Podwell. Growing Pains, Beverly Hills Brats, Earth Angel, Dallas, another Murder, She Wrote connection. Beverly Hills 90210 and Walker, Texas Ranger. Then Jay, played by Lance Fenton. He was in Highway to Heaven, Rags to Riches, The New Gidget, and the only movie I recognized him from, Heathers. He's one of the football players.
Oh, yeah.
Then we have Suzanne, played by Linnea Quigley. Obviously, she's in, like, everything. But just a couple highlights. Another Sorority Babes and Slimeball Ballorama alumni. Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, which we were talking about in our group chat the other day, Maurice. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Return of the Living Dead. That's where most people know her from. We already saw her once in Silent Night, Deadly Night. Witch Trap, Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, where she plays the boobs. Which I find that hilarious because it's like, that was her role in that movie, boobs.
And that is out of her relationship with Steve Johnson, who mm-hmm. did the effects in Night of the Demons. They met as he did a life cast of her boobs.
Yep.
Which comes up a little later.
And side note, what's funny about that is have you ever seen the Moira Brains Return of the Living Dead documentary?
Yes, I have.
Did you watch the part 3 one where he was talking about, because he did the effects for part 3?
Fill me in, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
He was talking about his relationship with Linnea, and he said it was Return of the Living Dead was where he first saw her. And his quote was, yeah, I saw her graveyard dance, and I thought to myself, I gotta get me some of that. Like, yeah, the way he puts it cracked me up.
He's a weird dude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is.
Yeah. I gotta get me some of that.
I mean, you know, look, Steve Johnson, we're all thinking it. You don't have to say it out loud, be a creep.
Right, exactly. Oh, man. But then we have Angela, played by Amelia Kincaid. As mentioned previously, she's in Night of the Demons 2 and 3. She's a Knight Rider, Break Into Electric Boogaloo, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, My Best Friend is a Vampire, The Golden Girls, and did I say Fame already? Fame.
Yes, and she got her start, and I believe she got her role in the movie because Rue McClanahan is her aunt.
Yes.
Rue McClanahan, also known from The Golden Girls.
Yep.
Blanche Devereaux.
Good old Blanche. Then we have Franny, played by Jill Terashita. The Big Bet, Terminal Entry, Dirty Laundry, and Sleepaway Camp 3, Teenage Wasteland. So we will be seeing her again. Then we have Max, played by Philip Tenzini, General Hospital, 21 Jump Street, L.A. Law. And then he did a bunch of, like, voice work and, like, rubber suit work. So he was in Ultraman, if you guys remember that TV show.
Mm-hmm.
He did voices for Invader Zim. Bunch of video games, Dead Rising, couple Metal Gear Solid games, couple Star Wars Jedi Knight games like Jedi Academy. So he's one of those guys that did a few live action roles and then went, F it, I'm going to go voice acting. Which, honestly, if I were in Hollywood, that's one of the roles that I think I'd have the most fun with is voice acting. I don't know about you,
I have a face for voice acting.
Yeah, well, exactly. Meanwhile, Josh has the talent for the voice acting.
I can do some great narration for porn for the visually impaired.
Oh, God. for anyone who hasn't seen this movie, the basic plot, it's very simple. But 10 teenagers party in an abandoned funeral parlor on Halloween night when an evil force awakens and demonic spirits keep them from leaving and turn their gathering into a living hell.
Spooky.
Right off the bat, typical horror movie logic, that is the stupidest idea ever.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, there's a character in this movie, one of my all-time favorite horror movie characters, Roger, who makes no bones about hiding how he thinks it's the stupidest idea in the world.
Yep. Oh, man. Yeah, Roger's a fun character. Actually, I like a lot of the characters in this because of how ridiculous they are.
Yeah.
Like, Stooge reminds me very much of, I can't remember which one of the Toxic Avenger cronies it was, but the guy who was just super hyper all the time.
Yeah.
Stooge kind of reminds me of, like, one of those guys. And he's just as hilarious, in my opinion.
Stooge actually is the only character in the movie that kind of has any emotional change.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's so one note, but Stooge kind of gets upset at points and goes from, like, being the loudmouth dickhead to, mm-hmm. like, oh, shucks, but you'll get to it.
Well, we open up with one of the coolest openings, in my opinion. I absolutely love this animated opening sequence with the credits and the title card. It's just, it's so cool looking.
It kicks ass.
And honestly, I wish I had seen this earlier, because I feel like as a kid, that's something I would have really loved. Because I always, pardon me, I've always had an affinity for like that weird static animation where it almost just looks like someone is dragging a cell across the screen.
Yeah, very like Monty Python.
Yeah, I've always loved that. But we transition from a cartoon jack-o'-lantern into a live-action jack-o'-lantern strapped atop the roof of Stooge's car. Inside, we see Stooge, Helen, and Roger. Stooge is driving, blasting his music. He drinks a beer, throws it out the window, and yells, "Trick or treat!" Just like...
And again, three characters that would never be friends.
Nope.
I can only guess that they're the only kids at this school. It doesn't make any sense when they're outside, because they show you where they live and it's clearly like Los Angeles at night.
Mm-hmm.
But like in my mind, they live in like an abandoned mining town and the senior class is like 12 kids.
I mean, it feels that way. But like Helen, I feel bad for Helen because Stooge is just, he's verbally abusive to her.
Yeah, I was going to say this is his first strike, because this is when she goes to change the radio station. He says, "Don't you dare, bitch. Get off of that."
And he slaps her hand.
Yeah.
Like, wow. So we've just met this character and already he's hitting and swearing at her.
He's a real fucking asshole already.
Oh, he is.
Listen, then, bitch, don't you be telling him my secret herbs and spices.
I'll punch you in the gut, see? And then Roger pops up from the back seat. I was like, what was he doing down there? Like, he was just below the seat.
He was reading his Bible.
Okay.
He's really good at hiding in cars. I mean, we see it later.
This is true. It's a skill. He pops up telling Stooge there's an old fart, and Stooge looks and sees the guy out the window, tells Helen to make herself useful and take the wheel, and he climbs over, forcing her to grab the wheel of the car. Then we see an old man walking down the sidewalk, and their car honks at him. He looks up to see Stooge's ass clad in pumpkin underwear waggling at him from the window. And as they drive by, he says, "Happy Halloween, asshole."
Let me add something here. Don't fucking do that to people.
No.
Don't say, "Take the wheel." It's nerve wracking. It's such a dickhead thing to do. Don't do it.
I thought you meant hang your ass out windows, but you know, that too.
That's not safe as well, but like nobody's manning the brake in the car.
Right.
That's something my father would do to me when I was a little kid. And it's the worst. Because one, I'm a little kid and I can't drive.
Mm-hmm.
And two, nobody's touching the brake. Anyways, go on.
The old man yells, he's like, "You stupid bastards, damn you all to hell."
And that's where he starts to exact his revenge.
Yep. Well, he already had some evil plans, we find out in a minute.
Oh, yeah, but now he's like, "Oh, I'm definitely doing it."
Right. So we cut to a POV shot across the street watching him, and the POV shot like runs up in front of the old man and dangles a rubber rat, scaring him, making him drop his groceries. And here's where we meet Sal, the stereotypical Guido. And he's like, "There's no fool like an old fool." And he's like,
You son of a bitch.
I love it. Sal's like, "Hey now, cool it, pops. You don't want to blow your pacemaker or something." It's like, oh, Sal, he's so terrible.
He never does it in the movie, but you want him to like turn a chair backwards and pop his collar and sit down.
Exactly. So he walks away laughing. The old man bends down to pick up his groceries. And then Judy comes up behind him, accidentally scaring him, and tries to help him pick his groceries up. And he tells her, he's like, "Leave me alone, you little whore." She's like, "I wouldn't help an old man like you anyway." And she runs off. And then he starts mumbling. He's like, "Damn rotten kids, they'll all get what they deserve." And this is where he picks up an apple and razor blades. And he's like, "They'll get what they deserve tonight.
You're all doomed."
Pretty much.
Those kids got a death wish. Little does he know that I'm throwing the apple out because it's healthy and it's Halloween.
Exactly. Who the hell's going to eat an apple?
Fucking not me.
Oh, hell no. But so Judy arrives home. She gets a call from Jay, and he tells her that there's been a change in plans. They're not going to go to the school dance, but instead a party at Hull House thrown by this girl, Angela, who Judy thinks is a creepy weirdo. Basically, she's the school's goth kid. Mm-hmm. So Jay convinces her it would be way more cool than the school dance. And besides, the dance is for nerds. I love how she quickly changes her tune. She's like, oh, okay, then. Like, oh, if it's for nerds, I'm out.
Well, she doesn't want to be a nerd. She wants to be a goth chick.
Yeah, she wants to be one of the cool kids. But she was like, you know, I really don't want to go to Hull House. And like, we don't know what's up with Hull House yet. We'll find out. But in this opening sequence, they make it very clear that Hull House equals bad. And while she's on the phone,
oh God, it's like, hey, let's, you know, okay, you're going to skip the prom. It's not cool. I get it. But then it's like, let's go party in the abandoned nuclear reactor. It's totally safe.
Well, that's the thing I love about 80s teenagers and horror movies. They have like no sense of self-preservation.
It's a real fucking thing. My brother growing up threw like he would throw raves in abandoned buildings. He's never going to listen to this. So I'm just going to tell the story anyways. And they picked the most dangerous fucking places because you need to drink somewhere and they're teenagers and they're maniacs.
Right.
Like, no, don't go into the sewer to party. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's where they keep all the used hypodermic needles. Maybe you shouldn't bring a keg and a strobe light in there, you maniacs.
Yeah, but if they're all hopped up on ecstasy, you know, they're not going to feel it anyway.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing nobody died, unlike Hull House.
Dun, dun, dun. But the whole time she's talking on the phone, we get a little peek of dead ass. Like she takes down her panties and purposely pulls her sweater up facing the mirror so we can see her butt, and then takes off her top and we see dem titties under a sheer bra. She gets off the phone and immediately she gets off the phone and Jay on the other end, we see him immediately tear up a box of Nilla wafers, and I fucking lost it. Like, it's just so random. Like, he's on the phone. He's all excited to go to a party. He's like, I'm going to tear up this box of cookies. Like, he just got so excited.
Makes me really want banana pudding every time I watch that scene.
Right?
Oh. Anyway.
And then we get the first jump scare.
She opens her door and opens her closet door, and her little brother jumps out with a rubber mask on.
Her little perverted brother.
The rubber mask that's a giant skull tit.
Right.
Bodacious boobs, sis.
I know. Her brother's the best.
Good.
I will go on record as I've never said that to my sister. I never thought about saying that to my sister. I don't know why this would even be in the movie. Right.
Exactly.
I've called them bodacious cha-chas before, and it went over great.
I mean, if you or I say that's fine, but that's her little brother, so it makes it really beyond weird.
Yeah, her little brother's a demented little fucking pervert.
Right. But yeah, he says like the whole wow bodacious boobie says, and then he goes, if you keep growing, you'll have to hire someone to tie your shoes. And then he runs out.
Just weird.
I love it because she
should have cut to the closet and the big pile of tissues and lotion that he left behind.
I love Judy's reaction, though, because it's totally like the Skinner. Ooh. She has that like just ooh little reaction. It's great. But someone is at their door. So Billy puts on his mask and goes to answer it, jumping out, trying to scare whoever it is. But there's no one there. Curious. So he looks around. He sees the garage door creaking, walks over, creaks it open, and Sal jumps out, scaring him. And he goes, I wish I had a camera. You look like you dropped a load, Junior. Sal is just all the Italian stereotypes.
Oh, my goodness. This whole scene is just ridiculous.
Oh, he goes, he starts fixing his hair, and he tells Billy, he's like, go get your sister and tell her Sal is here, and he brought his pet snake for her to play with. Oh my god. I love it because Billy goes, Judy's getting ready for a date, butthole. Like, The conversation back and forth is so good.
It's such Beavis and Butthead conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it really is. I love this, though, because Sal shows that he's so macho that beating children isn't off limits. Because he grabs somebody, he's like, he's threatening him to, you know, beat him up. And Billy threatens to call his mom, and Sal lets him go. He's like, hey, calm down, Junior. Like,
his one weakness, telling his mom.
He pulls out a quarter, and he's like, here, maybe this will loosen your lips. Billy's like, a measly quarter to betray my beloved sister? What do you think, this is a depression? And then Sal's like, all right, here's a
final
dollar.
Offer. Here's my final offer. $1.
And of
with
course,
your name on it.
He's such a Dick Tracy villain.
Oh God, he is.
You tell Jimmy the Fish that Vinny's in town. And get out of here, shoeshine. It's so. Anyways.
Oh my God, but yeah, that was enough for Billy to be like, you know, to tell him. He goes, "Sure, I'll tell you." He goes, "You don't have the balls to go there, anyways." They're, you know, she says she's going to a party at Hull House. Sal doesn't believe him at first, but, you know, Billy insists.
Oh, she won't be seen at Hull House.
He's like, if you're lying, I'm coming back here to kick your ass. And then he steals his mask and leaves. And now we smash cut to Linnea Quigley's ass.
Go on.
I was going to say. Oh, good.
And the real Beavis and Butthead just sitting there.
Yeah. The most aggressive gum chewing I've ever seen in my life.
And that same guy had that, like, wicked comb over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But I know her name is Suzanne. I will refer to her as Linnea throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
But so she's bent down at a convenience store. Like Maurice said, we got the two Beavis and Butthead clerks at the counter excitedly watching while Angela runs around the store stealing random shit for the party.
And nobody stops her.
Yeah. There was not a like everyone was just ignore it. I'm not looking.
Well, I think other people were stealing too at that point.
Yeah.
They may have been.
And why the hell was she stealing cereal? Who brings cereal to a party?
Angela does. Cause she's goth.
Yeah, and she's got like a bowl of Chex Mix at the party later. I think it's just like cheese balls and Lucky Charms and like cat food. It's just shit she stole.
She's like, because she wasn't looking at what she was putting in the bag. She was looking back at the counter.
Just grabbing. Yeah.
Yep.
I think this is going to be this episode long tale that's very embarrassing to me, but I don't care because it's hilarious. I was 8 years old, and then the minute I saw Linnea Quigley's ass, that's the minute I was like, oh, girls. What? Carry on.
I can kind of agree, and for me it was Return of the Living Dead.
I don't remember what I saw first. I don't think I made the connection, and Return of the Living Dead, I know I saw first on, like, a copy of a copy on VHS.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't get a good look at trash.
Gotcha.
You get a good look at Night of the Demons.
For me, I saw Return of the Living Dead when it was on HBO. So it was, like, probably about a year after it was done in theaters. It's probably, like, 1986, maybe.
Yep.
Somewhere around there. I just remember my dad letting me watch it with, like, because we used to do family movie night on Friday nights. I've talked about that before. And, you know, my mom was a little concerned because it was an R-rated horror movie. And, like, I've gotten scared at some of the other movies before. And he was like, it says it's a comedy. I remember my dad saying that because he always brought up how the Tar Man shouldn't have scared me because it was a funny movie. But, yeah, so I watched it with my family. And, yeah, got to see that. Graveyard Dance, and that definitely opened my eyes to some things.
Yeah, my father did the same thing where we would go to the video store and he'd always get like the guy at the desk to give him recommendations, who was always like the pimply kid who works there, and he'd always be like, you want to rent this one, it's really good. And then he'd have an excuse because he didn't have all the time in the world to watch movies, and then he'd be like, yeah, Mikey can watch this, it's fine. 9.5 weeks. That's like that new Garfield film. He'll be okay. You know what I mean? I was too stupid to realize what was going on because my dad wanted to watch it.
Right.
He's a smart man.
Yep. But so Angela signals Linnea and you know, she scurries out with the goods. Then Linnea turns to the clerk and the clerks and asks, "Do you boys have sour balls?" He's like, "Why, we sure do." She's like, "We too sure bad. Do. Too bad. I bet you don't get many blowjobs." And then she leaves and they're like, "Oh."
I guess in the R-rated cut, they take out the sour balls. Well, and I don't know why.
Well, they're like, "Oh, here, you want some candy?"
The late night TV version of it, she never finishes the joke.
Ah, okay.
So, like, the USA Up All Night, yeah, it's usually where I watched it. It would always be like, "You guys have any sour balls?" And they would just cut to them like,
"Sure we do. Oh, we sure do." And then they cut out the, "I bet you don't get many blowjobs."
Yeah.
Because you can't put that on the USA Network.
Have Gilbert Gottfried saying something about that. Do you guys remember when he was the host of that? The Up All Night?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was. He was the host of Saturday night, I think. And then Friday night was Rhonda Shear.
Yep.
This is where we would need Josh because he does the perfect Gilbert Gottfried.
Yes.
And I won't even try it because it would be bad.
He would tell us all about his horse Point Break. Oh, man. So, yeah, so she saunters out of the store to meet up with Angela and they head off to the party. So now we cut back to Jay at Judy's house, waiting for her to finish getting ready. Her little brother sits on the couch and Jay says, "You must be Judy's little brother, huh? You're pretty lucky. She's a real nice girl." And he goes, "Yeah, you dating her for her personality or because she's got big cha-chas?" And Jay just stands there.
Well, we find out later. It's definitely the cha-chas.
Oh, yeah. But he just, I love the look. He just stands there like, what do I say to that? Like he wasn't sure. He had to think about it. But then Mom comes up and offers Jay a fudge log, which is basically cat shit on a plate.
It's my favorite line of the movie. Just repeat it. Go ahead.
And well, he turns it down repeatedly. And then Billy pipes up. He's like, "Of course he doesn't want one. They look like sun-dried poodle turds, Mom." Oh, it's funny every time.
It never gets old.
Oh, Billy. He's a great character. But so Judy comes out embarrassed by her family's antics. Jay goes in for a kiss. She pulls away and says they need to get going, and the two take off. And I had a little note here that I want all of the decorations that were in this house. I had most of them as a kid, and I want them all again. Those paper decorations that you would get at, like, Rite Aid.
Yes.
I miss those.
In the scene at the convenience store, there's a big basket just full of, like, Don Post masks.
Yep. I miss that stuff.
Further to my point that I love to make all the time, if nerds invented time travel, they're just going to go back to, like, the 80s and buy stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They're not going to prevent JFK's assassination or anything like that. They're going to be like, "Let me get this Superman 1. Let me buy these vintage Transformers. Let me buy whatever I'm collecting," and then go back to modern times.
I have legit fantasized about this many, many times.
Yes.
Like, how cool would it be just to go back to a Toys R Us in the 80s and buy all the G.I. Joes? Oh, man. But anywho, so we cut to Stooge, Helen, and Roger driving to the party, bitching about the directions and at each other. And I love it because I didn't write down everything except one line. Stooge is like, "Why did I even go anywhere with you two wipes?" Like, he calls them wipes. And I'm like, that is a great insult.
He's so eloquent.
But Stooge is basically good.
He could have at least said ass wipes to keep up with the Beavis and Butthead theme.
I don't know. There's something about wipes that makes it funnier to me. But he's basically the suicide of this movie. Like, he's got the shitty car. He doesn't like any of his friends. Like, he's always angry.
I love all the scenes in his car because they're clearly on a flatbed truck. There's no windshield.
Yep.
And watching it now in HD, it's like crystal clear what's going on. And there's just like two grips right outside the car shaking it. Exactly. It's hilarious.
But We cut to Jay and Judy picking up Franny and Max and heading off to the party. So now back to Stooge, Helen, and Roger, and we see that they have a flat tire. The Stooge has a spare, but no tire iron. I love this. He's like, I told you, I always carry a spare. I didn't say nothing about a tire iron. So he's like, I know where it is. We just got to start walking. So they, you know, plan to walk to Hull House. Just then, Jay and the others drive up. Max leans out the window and says, hey, do you guys need a hand? And they're like, oh, yeah, we sure do. And then everyone in Jay's car just starts clapping and they leave. It's like, wow, your friends are dicks. But then Jay and the others arrive at Hull House, and we see that awesome matte painting that is Hull House.
Yep.
We find out here, now we get this big info dump. We find out here that it used to be a funeral parlor, and that old man Hull was fucking the dead bodies. And I love Jay's response. He goes, it's like, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I once saw a portrait of Mrs. Hull. I'm like, so, wait, he's got an ugly wife, so fucking corpses is the next logical step?
Or was his wife so hot when she was dead, he fucked her?
Ah, okay, good point. Well, I don't know, because the whole family died, so.
Or did they die by fucking?
Maybe.
See, prequel, let's make it.
One giant funeral parlor orgy.
Yes.
But so they go on to talk about the entire Hull House being like all of the family being murdered. And they said one of them went crazy and killed the rest of the family, then committed suicide. But they never found out who did it because there was too much blood and guts. I'm like, how did they commit suicide? Like, what did they do to themselves? There was just no way to tell who did what.
They invent Horizon themselves.
Pretty much. But everyone except Judy looks excited to party there. She's the only one that looks nervous. So they pull up in front and comment how the gate wasn't even locked. So we'll know for later that, you know, there was supposed to be a gate there. Because clearly there's no gate for this set. And Jay comments that the county used to keep the place locked up all the time, but then the locks kept disappearing, so they finally gave up. Now we get yet another parlor scene where Max goes over to the brick wall. And he's like, they're like, what are you doing, Max? He's like, oh, checking an old legend about this place. And he takes his stethoscope for his doctor's costume. So it must have been a real stethoscope. Usually those are cheap plastic. But he's listening to the ground by the brick wall. Calls Judy over and shows her. And she was like, oh, water. And he goes, yeah, legend has it that there's an underground stream that goes all the way around this property and that the brick wall marks it off.
Two things. I don't think that's how stethoscopes work.
Exactly.
And I don't think that's how streams work.
No.
Anyways.
It could be well water, you know, like, you know, groundwater.
I'm going with the sewer.
That works, too. Mm-hmm. But if it's Calabunga. Constantly running, you know, be a problem.
Kid Jason's down there with the chuds.
Partying with the turtles. Mm-hmm. He's at the sewer rave with the Ninja Turtles.
With my brother.
Oh, man. But yeah, it's very clear what, you know, they're trying to do here is set up like we need some ground rules for how this is all going to play out. And then he goes on to say that, you know, yeah, legend says that it was built here because the evil spirits that haunt the property can't cross the running water. So I'm like, I wonder if that's going to come into play later.
It really comes into play in the remake.
This is true. But the group head inside, it's a cobwebbed, dusty mess, and Franny makes a comment about needing to fire the maid, and then Max is like, yeah, someone already did. She was killed with the rest of the family, only someone managed to roast her. And I was like, oh, ha, 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 she was fired. Mm-hmm. I get it. That's funny. So they find a coffin, and then Jay sees the rest of the group pulling up outside and decides they should hide and jump out and scare him. He opens the coffin and out pops Sal with Billy's mask and scares the group. He's like, hey, fuck you guys. But Jay gets pissed. And then Judy scolds him saying, you were about to do the exact same thing, but Sal beat you to it. So no one is happy to see Sal. And then this is where Max calls him Count Dingleberry, the flaming asshole of Transylvania. I was like, you know, somebody wrote that line and was like, yeah, we got to put that in the movie somewhere. Like, they were really proud of that line. But Angela, Linnea, Stooge, and the others all show up. And then we cut to the group having their party. all the guys are watching Linnea dance around. We get a scene where Judy is over trying to light the candles on the snack table with a lighter, with Chekhov's lighter, which will come into play later. And she sets it down on the table, and Angela makes a comment about how you don't want to go littering up this place. The spirits might not appreciate it.
This so cracks me up. So is this everything she stole from the Quickie Mart?
I think
because
so.
Because there's tons of decorations. It's like a full Halloween spread. Like, where did she really went all out to decorate the abandoned funeral home that they're breaking into? Because there's, like, the cardboard skeleton hanging on the wall. All kinds of, like, crazy stuff.
That's what that pillow, what that pillowcase was so full of.
She was really grabbing everything. Stuff, yeah.
But I love that Linnea's ass distracted those guys that long. She just sat there waggling it back and forth.
Well, there's probably plenty of things that would distract those two bozos.
This is true. But, so we get this moment of Linnea warming her ass by the fire and waggling it in front of Max's face. And he don't even try to hide that he's watching it. Like, his girlfriend's right there. He's just staring right at it.
Yeah, she lit a fire under her ass.
Ba-dum-bum. But yeah, then so we cut to Judy and Jay dancing. Linnea comes up and starts dancing around him, and Jay just kind of snubs Judy and goes off to dance with Linnea. I was like, oh, dude, you're a dick. But suddenly the music cuts out, and Angela tells him there'll be plenty of time for dancing later, but now it's time for party games.
Well, because I was watching, I was like, how the hell is there electricity in this place? And right. That's when he's like, oh, I put batteries in this morning. But here's the thing. The radio went out, and so did the strobe lights. And right. They're not on the same batteries.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of didn't make sense.
I love it. What does the great Don DeRozio say?
Movies got a movie.
This is true. But I love Sal's reaction, because he turns to Stooge and he's like, hey, haven't you heard of D-cells before? Why is Stooge, or why is Sal such an Italian stereotype? It's ridiculous.
Well, but, I mean, you see his name later. I mean, he is Italian in this movie.
This is true.
Sal Romero.
Gee, I wonder who that was a call to. But I love this, because after Angela says we can play the party games, Stooge goes, yeah, we can play post orifice and you can be the stamp. And he makes a licking sound. I'm like, Jesus, Stooge.
No, she doesn't want to do any of that fun that stuff. She wants to do a seance.
Oh, man. So they're talking about, you know, they need to do a seance. And Judy and Helen are both a little hesitant, saying it's Halloween and who knows what they'll dredge up in an old place like this. And then Franny suggests a past life seance where they look into a mirror and see their past lives. And Stooge goes, great, what kind of drugs are we going to need for this? I love the constant commentary from Stooge.
Mm-hmm.
But Linnea holds up her compact, which she's always looking in her mirror, like fixing her makeup. That's one thing I forgot to mention when they were getting ready to go for the party. She was whining about there better be cute boys there, and she was looking at herself in the mirror.
And I'm still not sure if, like, Steve Johnson, he's a very talented effects artist, if he, like, they get up on close in her face, and it's really clear that she's got some skin issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's just Linnea Quigley up close is like, whoa, or that was Steve Johnson because she's so vain that they had to put that in there. Because I've only seen Linnea Quigley now.
Right.
I didn't get to meet Linnea Quigley in the 80s. So, like, I don't know.
You know, I have a feeling it might be makeup, because I've seen still images of her from Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street 4. And, like, where she just has makeup from the neck down. Because, again, she just plays the boobs in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And her face doesn't look like it's got some, yeah, it doesn't look kind of pockmarked or anything. Like,
yeah.
It looks pretty normal. And that was well after this movie. So I wonder if that was. And it might have been, because later on when her face first starts to transform, they do that in camera. So I wonder if they had already laid the groundwork for some of the prosthetics.
Makes you think.
If they did, that's, you know, dude needs more credit. But anywho, so she looks up, she holds up her compact and is like, will this mirror do? And Angela tells her, no, they need a mirror that they can all look into. They then suddenly hear a noise coming from another room. They all look frightened. Stooge grabs Roger and drags him into the next room, telling him, be a man, Roger. Let's go find out what that is. And Roger's just, he wants none of this. He's freaking out the entire time. So they disappear into the next room. The group anxiously awaits Roger and Stooge coming back. Roger pops out into the room and Stooge follows him and goes, you'll never believe what I found. Then we cut to them having brought a large antique mirror into the room. So they all sit down in front of the stand-up mirror, and Angela tells them to stare at her reflection in the mirror until the rest of the mirror becomes cloudy, and they'll see what she looked like in a past life. The mirror goes black, and suddenly you hear Sal go, holy shit! then it turns back, and we can see all the reflections. Angela turns, you know, Angela and the rest of the group turn around to yell at Sal, and Helen is still looking, you know, in the mirror. And we see this demonic face kind of pop up, and then she sees her own dead body. She screams, scoots away, and ends up knocking over the mirror, breaking it. I love this shot, though, because we see the shattered glass on the floor and all the different characters in the different pieces of glass looking down and talking. Like, it was just a really cool shot.
Yeah, very, very good.
Yeah. But so everyone gets pissed at her, you know, for fucking it up. And Stooge, again, he is so verbally abusive to her. He's like, fester and fuckwads, you cannot take this bitch anywhere. I was like, holy shit. Like, he's just mean as fuck. But Helen tries to explain that she saw something in the mirror. Judy tries to comfort her. Well, the others are basically like, you dumb bitch. Like, they're just so pissed at her. Jay says it was probably Sal in his mask, and Sal goes, I wasn't wearing a mask. And Stooge goes, that's much worse. Oh, that's fantastic. So they hear more noises. Jay says it's probably some people arriving late to the party. He turns to Angela and says, you did invite more people, didn't you? She shakes her head no. Judy points out that it sounds like it's coming from the basement. Then we pan down to the basement where we see the crematorium. Crematorium, or like the oven door opens. We see the demon head in there, and then we get a POV shot of it moving rapidly through the house. Then it gets into the room with all the kids, and they comment on how cold it is and like how it stinks all of a sudden. They're like, who cut the cheese and all that? And it's just kind of panning around the room looking at everybody. Linnea is once again applying lipstick in a mirror, and the demon goes into her open mouth, possessing her.
I forgot who says it, but someone says Stooge must be wearing his mom's dirty panties. was it Sal or Max? Yes,
yeah, it was Sal. And then he goes, at least my mom wears panties. It's like, okay.
Lucky but, demon getting it going, Linnea Quigley's mouth. Sorry. Oh,
like so many boys from the 80s wanted to.
Yeah.
But Angela tells him that she doesn't like what's happening here. She comments on the noises, the stink, the chill. She says it's all signs of demonic infestation. Of course, none of them believe her and, you know, think she's just trying to spook them.
Hey, she's a goth chick. She's an expert in that shit.
Right. Roger. Oh, good.
I was going to say, Roger's the only smart one. He's like, I want to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Roger,
my pop is a pastor.
Yeah, like, this is the point where Roger becomes that, like, the stereotypical fuck this, I'm out character that I think everybody's stereotype of those characters come from Roger.
Agreed. Yeah, he's the smart one. There's always one in every group of these, like these types of horror movies. There's always the one person who's like, I don't think we should be doing this. He's that guy.
He's got to like turn up to a realistic level, because every time I watch this, other than the fact that I would be dead in 10 minutes because Linnea Quigley's there, and I would just lose all common sense. But if she wasn't, I'd be the guy like, fuck this, I'm out.
Right.
Not worth the trouble. Bye.
And I do like the level of realism with Roger, because he's so worried about saving his own skin. Like, anytime his friends are in trouble, he's like, fuck this. And he just runs. He runs away and leaves Judy so many times.
I don't blame him. I leave her too.
Right? Oh my god. But yeah, so she's trying to convince him, and then yeah, Raji's like, Roger is like, he goes, my daddy's a preacher and I know better than to be messing around with this kind of stuff. They all tease him and, you know, say that, you know, he's being a pussy. And then Max comments on how he now smells roses and wonders what could be making that smell, saying, are we experiencing multiple ghosts? And Angela tells
farting.
Farting roses, apparently. And Angela tells him the house isn't haunted, it's possessed. And I love this because Judy, like a fucking robot, she's like, what is the difference between a haunted house and a possessed house? Like, the way she delivers that line, I'm like, okay, guys, come on, take two.
Input,
take two.
Input.
She's the new Gidget. But then Angela explains that a haunted house is the spirits of people who died there, but a possessed house is filled with spirits who have never had human form. They've only existed in spirit form and are pure evil. In other words, demons. So Stooge comments, he's like, come on, you guys can't really believe this place is possessed. And Sal goes, nah, just repossessed. And of course they all laugh.
Hey.
Hey.
And then Demon Linnea pipes up in this like deep voice. She's like, for tonight anyway. And they all just look at her.
And nobody even like says anything like, oh, your voice is different.
Yeah, this they is just like, stare
this
at
is
her.
Linnea's acting range. So you get Bimbo Linnea, and then there's like Serious Ominous Linnea. That's Serious Ominous Linnea.
But I love how the tension is immediately cut by Stooge, because he just goes, eat a bowl of fuck, I'm here to party.
another line that I should quote more.
Right. Eat a bowl of fuck. I'm here to party.
Eat a bowl of fuck.
So Judy suggests that maybe Roger is right and they should leave. Helen agrees, and Roger says that they'll need a ride. Stooge reminds him that his car is in a ditch 2 miles away. So Linnea throws Roger the keys to Angela's car, which Angela protests quickly. And Linnea's like, chill out, hon. It's your party. You're not going anywhere. In that deep demon voice.
The moment where Linnea's balls drop.
Oh, she's going through changes. Jay comments that he and Judy have some exploring to do, and Max and Franny say they need to do the same. So the four of them split off and go find some privacy, leaving Sal.
So they can explore each other.
Exactly.
Look, I get being a teenager and horny. I totally understand that. Mm-hmm. But in a fucking event, like an abandoned mausoleum?
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
Like, there's cars outside. If you really have to have sex, like,
right?
Horror movie logic.
I've never understood that.
I'd be with Roger and Helen. I'd be getting the hell out of there.
Oh hell yeah! Just I'd be like, nope, I'm gone. But so they leave Sal, Stooge, Linnea, and Angela together. Linnea tells them that she's going to go find the bathroom. Sal tells him, he's like, I'll come with you and protect you. She goes, no thanks, I'd rather take Stooge.
Every time the scene happens, like, I need to find the bathroom, I picture Linnea saying, like, I need to take a wicked dump.
Stooge, says, come wait for me. Why would you want to take that pig?
She goes,
she said, maybe I'm in the mood for pork tonight.
And Stooge oinks. So Linnea grabs, before they leave, Linnea grabs Angela, and much to the excitement of Stooge and Sal, and kisses her. We see the demon possessing Angela, and basically then Linnea and Stooge leaving Sal and Angela together. Angela turns.
Let me add a piece to the story.
Okay.
So I discovered girls in this movie. And then I discovered lesbians. So a 1-2 punch of Linnea Quigley, then it's like a bimbo and a goth girl, and they're kissing while I'm 8. So I'm like, what?
I'm just picturing the Jack Skellington. What is this? Or what's this?
Yeah. What's this? What's this? Lesbians everywhere. What's this?
You don't want to say there's white stuff in the air.
There's white stuff in the air. All right.
Oh. So they make out, and then
my pants are suddenly tight. What's this?
So Stooge and Linnea run off to find the bathroom, and Angela turns and smiles very creepily at Sal. Now we cut to Jay and the others exploring, and then back to Stooge and Linnea looking for the bathroom. And I love it. He's got this one line. He's like, oh God, one of these better be right or I'm going to water the hallway.
He's so romantic.
He has the best lines. But they find the bathroom. Linnea runs in and says, ladies before germs. And then Stooge is all sad. He's like, oh, I thought we were going to go in together. And I'm like, clearly Stooge is into water sports.
I feel bad for Stooge at that moment.
Right.
Because he breaks character and he's like, aw, and he's like leaning against the door all pouty, and it's like, aw, Stooge.
I don't feel bad for him at all.
He just wanted this random girl to pee on him, that's all.
Yeah. He had to get the Cleveland steamer he wanted in the funeral service, you know, in the funeral home.
Oh God, that's horrifying. So he looks down the hall, you know, he's in the hallway now by himself. He looks down all creeped out. And kind of like walks around, and then he turns the corner looking down another hallway, and wind blows, scaring him. I'm like, all right. Like, they never pay that scene off. Just wind blows through the hall, scaring him.
Demon wind.
Yeah. Oh, God, that movie. Oh, Lord. But we cut back to Jay and the others. Max is telling them another spooky story about how the land that they're on already had a bad rap before the white colonizers arrived. That the Native Americans that lived in the area wouldn't set foot on this side of the underground creek. They knew the land was unclean. Then Kenan goes on talking about like one Native American who did set up camp there and ended up killing his entire family and like eating his kid. So pretty fucked up story.
Let me tell you a story about Native American cannibalism. Hey, let's go have sex in the other room.
Right, because as soon as he's done, Jay kind of gives him the signal for, like, get the fuck out of here. And Max goes, oh, I think it's time Franny and I do some exploring of our own. And then they just take off, leaving Jay and Judy alone. And Jay immediately starts groping her because Jay is a jerk. Like, he doesn't even waste any time. The door closes and he's got a hand on her tit. Like, damn. So she tells him not here and just, you know, kind of back off, and he looks all butthurt, and she's like, just hold me. And he's like, oh. So we cut outside to Roger and Helen, and they're walking along the brick wall. Roger is freaking out because he's like, the gate is just gone. He's like, it was here. It's all just wall now. The gate's gone. And Helen just looks defeated. She's like, just give up. Don't you get it? We've already died. We're in hell. He's like,
All he needed to look for was the worm from Labyrinth. To tell him how to get through that wall. Because it's the 80s. And that's a horrible joke. Anyways, go on.
Remember, go right. Because if you go left, you go into the labyrinth.
That's right.
If you go right, you get right to the castle. So he's freaking out. He's like, he tells her not to go crazy on him. And he's like, you know, the gate has to be here. We'll find it. And she's like, we've been around this 2 times already. The gate's gone. They're not going to let us leave. So he starts pounding on the wall. He's like, there's got to be a gate here. And we zoom in on Roger. And then we zoom back out and Helen is gone. And he looks terrified. So he looks around.
I would have told Helen to get on all fours. And I would have climbed on her back and then climbed over the wall. And I'm like, okay, I'll send help. Bye.
I mean, you know, you'd think that they would have at least given each other a boost up onto the top of the wall, like, but yeah, no. So Roger looks around calling out for her, and hears a woman's voice calling out his name in like a sing-song way. She's like, you know, it's that like, Roger, kind of song. And then this gruff voice is like, Roger. He takes off and hides in a car. He's like, fuck this. Now we cut back to Jay and Judy making out. Judy is still trying to get him to stop. And eventually he gets all pissed and is like I'm paraphrasing here. But he's like, what the fuck? Everyone at school knows you're a loose hoe bag. Why don't you want to tickle my pickle? Like,
I think he says, like, dude, you with Vinny? And she's like, what does that mean?
Sal.
Or Sal, yeah. I'm sorry, Vinny, Sal, whatever.
Yeah, well, they're the same guy. But yeah, he basically says that the whole school knows she fucked Sal, so, you know, why won't she fuck him? Like, don't you want it as much as I do?
Because like, you're in a haunted funeral home?
Right.
Do you need more reasons?
And she gets pissed off and shoves him off of her, and he's like, whatever, I'm out of here. And he leaves and slams the door shut, like, locking her in the room. Like, he's such a dick.
Guess I'll go take a cold shower, space mummy.
Space mummy.
Sorry.
Oh, man. So we cut the Stooge pounding on the outside of the bathroom door, asking, what'd you do, fall in the fucking toilet or what?
How big is that shit?
And we cut to Linnea standing at the sink, and I fucking love this effect. She's got her head hung down, then she looks up in the mirror, and it looks like just normal Linnea, and then her face begins to change, and it's like this cool stretching effect where the latex across her face kind of stretches out, and it's so cool looking.
So if you watch the extras on the Anchor Bay 2-disc of Night of the Demons, I think they talked to Steve Johnson. He got away with this because he was dating Linnea, and he did it old school Lon Chaney style with like medical tape and fish skin. Like, he's literally pulling her face off screen, and she's like, well, it's my boyfriend, and let That's him get crazy. Away with it. Yeah.
It's a great effect, though. It looks amazing. Awesome. But yeah, that's friggin' nuts. But outside, Stooge hears the glass in the bathroom shatter, so he busts down the door to check on Linnea. He gets in there, sees the broken mirror, but no Linnea. And then suddenly the door slams shut behind him. He opens the door, looks out in the hallway. Linnea is nowhere to be found. He goes, you dizzy bitch. Again, Stooge, his fucking lines. So now we cut to Sal and Angela. And Angela tells him, blessed be the sinners, for the day of atonement is at hand. And he's like, hey, yo, the fuck's that mean, you dizzy broad? I mean, not really, but yeah, you know, I'm just paraphrasing here.
But, Angela, ominous goth shit. Sorry.
Angela starts rubbing on herself and crawling on the floor. The stereo suddenly switches on and begins blasting Stigmata Martyr by Bauhaus. And Now we get the awesome Angela dance sequence that she choreographed herself. So Amelia was a Kincaid. She made this whole dance up.
Trained ballerina.
Yep.
And guys, I just want to say, this is how Mike Alvarez used to dance at the Continental.
I mean, you know, he's not wrong.
I'd be, you know, like the gender reversal, and that's how Susie met you. She walked in, and you're crawling on the floor with a strobe light to Bauhaus. It's like, wow, this guy seems fun.
I was the only one that wasn't mirror dancing. But yeah, this definitely helped to shape my tastes later in my teen years.
Yeah, if this didn't get you, Lydia did.
Yeah. Now this was the one for me. I was like, so I kind of like spooky chicks now. Yep. And this is also when I was introduced to Bauhaus was this movie.
Your brain immediately was like, mental note, dress as a goth when you're a teenager.
Maybe have chance with goth girl.
Yes. End goal, goth chicks.
Yep. So Sal looks all freaked out and like kind of backs out of the room and into Stooge, who's just standing in the darkness. Stooge gets all excited watching Angela dance, and he goes into the room. Sal tries to stop him, telling him she's acting really fucking weird. And Stooge tells him, he's basically, don't worry. He goes, didn't your mom tell you anything? It's not the weird ones you need to watch out for. He goes in to talk to Angela. Sal backs away and leaves.
I like the way Stooge thinks.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm stupid like Stooge.
Well, yeah, no, that's what I said. Like, you know, my interest in goth chicks, I would have been Stooge.
Everything I know in life, I learned from Stooge.
I was the fat blonde kid that was interested in goth chicks, so yeah. But Stooge and Angela begin dancing, and she tells him she never realized how sexy he was. And then she says to kiss her. So he excitedly does so and immediately regrets it as she bites out his tongue. Stooge reels back screaming with blood all over his face. Angela spits out his tongue and laughs, and now she has janky demon teeth.
And I wrote down Goth, 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 Goth got you by the tongue.
Oh, man. That's another thing that's always freaked me out in horror movies, because they've done it 1,000 times, like where somebody bites out somebody else's tongue or pulls out somebody's it always freaks me out.
So this is going to play into part 3 of my story. I thought, because I was 8 years old, this is what girls were like. If you didn't kiss them good, they will bite your tongue out.
It's true. It's not true.
I'm with Maurice. I have not had any evidence that this isn't true.
I mean, especially when dating goth chicks. You got to be careful, man.
Goth chicks are dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to tell too many stories here, lest my wife listens, but...
I'm with you.
But there was some dating experiences, let's just say, that were rather harsh. The fact that I continued to go back to goth chicks afterward says a lot about me that I don't think I'm ready to tackle yet.
So, I mean, I can't say for me personally. I know this other Mike, who's got he looks like Jesus with chiseled abs. And glasses. He's anyways, this joke's going nowhere. I'm with you. This is a psychiatrist's wet dream.
Oh, yeah.
That I'm a glutton for punishment like this.
Well, let's just say there was one in particular, and my wife does know about this girl because, it was kind of one of the things that messed me up when we started dating. I was not a very trusting individual. This one girl was very physically abusive at times, and I kept going back for more. So, even though things ended multiple times, I was dumb enough to keep going back because, again, hot goth chick, and yeah, there was a lot of fun to be had, but so, yeah, clearly when you're young, you are very dumb.
Yeah, yeah.
So, that was bad juju. But
what was that, the Weezer line, you goddamn goth Japanese girls get me every time? I'm making a joke. It's Japanese girls. And then he starts to rap and ruins Weezer. Anyways.
I was like, wait, I know this song. Oh my god. But so we cut to Sal looking around, trying to find a way out, and he finds Linnea sitting in a corner, and the lights flicker on. And he's like, what's up with the lights? Wait a second, when did the house get electricity? And she turns to him, and she has a lipstick heart drawn on her face. And she's like, I'm fixing my face, I can't seem to get it right. And I love it, because, again, Sal, he's like, hey, yo, not you two, you and Angela are a bunch of real spooky, dizzy bitches, so I don't go in for that type, I'm going home. She tells him, you are home, Sal, and he's like, this dirty dive don't spell home to me. I live in a nice house, you know, with plastic slip covers on the furniture. He's like, I'm out of here. He takes off.
Nobody could do anything in this movie without a great one-liner.
And then Sal leaves, and Linnea just rips open her top, revealing them titties.
Oh, Linnea.
Yep. We cut to Franny and Max in a room with some coffins, and Max says, I've never made it in a coffin before, and she's like, me either. And he's like, well, what are we waiting for? And they both begin to strip. I'm like,
They deserve to die.
Right. let's remove just the fucked up idea of fucking in someone's final resting place. But I imagine fucking in a coffin would be about as comfortable as fucking in the back of a Volkswagen. Yeah. Like, you know, that sounds very uncomfortable.
And you would think that there was like a couch somewhere.
I think there was a couch in that room.
I know, like a million better places than a fucking coffin, which is balancing on one of those little carts, by the way.
Right. Like, so, don't. You're going to have to do the MPAA thrusting. Only thrust so many counts.
Because you're going to fall. The coffin's going to tip over.
You know? Right. Oh, man. So now we cut back to Linnea's titties, and we get the infamous lipstick nipple scene. Now, okay. Go for it.
What am I at, part four? So, this effect is so good.
Mm-hmm.
It took me years to figure out how the effect was done. I thought it was real for the longest time.
Mm-hmm.
Longer than I'd like to admit. And I thought, this is how women get ready for sexy time. So I thought women were like kangaroos and that they had storage in their boobs. So Linnea puts her face on and then's like, oh, let me put the lipstick away. Bloop. So if you haven't seen the movie, Linnea connects the dots, la la la, on her face with red lipstick and then swirls around her face. She makes like some bizarre Ultimate Warrior lipstick face, takes it to her boob, does a swirly around her boob, and then pushes it into her nipple.
Mm-hmm.
And without the benefit of high definition, it looks very, very real because Steve Johnson is that good. What he did is he took a mold. He used this movie as an excuse to take a mold of Linnea's boobs. And she's in the scene with fake boobs in front of her and her body's recessed and her arms are real.
Mm-hmm.
It's so lifelike you think it's the real thing. And she's actually pushing them into rubber boobs. So it's fake from the chin down.
Well, and it's kind of ingenious that they basically already did the establishing shot of Linnea topless.
Yes.
So we get the establishing shot of that's actually like, hey, that's Linnea's boobs. So when we cut back to the life cast, it's like it's seamless. And I mean, granted, in high def, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I see the color variation now. But
and there's no reason that she's doing this.
Right.
Other than we have Linnea Quigley. We got to do something with her boobs.
Well, right. It was the 80s standard of you have to have some tits like that. That has to be in a horror movie. And they were always trying to one up each other with effects. So it was like, hey, nobody's done something like this before. Let's just put it in.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's really no reason for this scene.
Yeah. Other than like, to just show off a cool effect.
Yeah. Like mm-hmm. why was the demon like, yeah. Anyway,
now see, and this is one of those things where in the remake, unfortunately, it's like part CG, but they do the like part of it is practical. The girl, you know, pushes the lipstick into her nipple, but then pulls it out of her crotch. And there's like the squelching sound and all the blood. And it's like, all right, I mean, I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to one up the original scene, which, you know, bravo, you at least changed it. You didn't copy it exact. But my favorite, and the reason why I like the remake scene just a tad better as far as the movie goes, is the dude's reaction who saw it. I forget the character name, but he came out and he's like, is she into magic? And they're like, no, why? And they're like, she pushed a lipstick, and they're like, just say it. He's like, she pushed a lipstick into her nipple and pulled it out of her pussy. Like, he just panics. And it's the perfect reaction to how you would feel if you just witnessed that.
The best vending machine ever.
Oh, my God. Put a quarter in the nipple, pull out a gachapon.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. But yeah, so that whole sequence is amazing. Such a great effect. And then Jay comes in and sees her, sees Linnea, and she kind of shows him her titties. And he's like, that's not a bad paint job, but I think it needs some touching up. And I'm like, Touching, huh?
He's so horned up that not once is he like, what the fuck?
Right. Clearly she has a mental problem here. You know, she's covered in lipstick and half naked.
Hey, it's not the crazy ones you got to worry about.
But I love it because he goes, he's like, hey, when did the lights come on? And then she grabs his crotch and unzips his pants. And he's like, okay, forget the lights. Like, that didn't take long. And then we cut to Sal heading toward the front door. He sees Angela sitting by the fire. And he goes, hey, Angela, I'm leaving. And every time he says Angela, all I can hear is, who's the boss? Angela. Like, hey, Angela. But she turns to him and says, oh, there you are. I was just warming my hands in the fire, and holds up her melting, flaming hands. And it's like, that was a cool scene, too. And again, that's a simple effect, but it was cool looking.
And I guess they had a bucket full of ice water.
Yeah, for her to put her hands out.
Hands out, yeah.
But that's, I mean, they do another fire effect in this, and we'll talk about that. But there's, this is one of my favorite things in, like, 80s horror that you don't really see much in movies anymore because they don't need to do it this way. But back then, it's like, my God, the crazy fire stunts that effects guys would do in movies back then. It's impressive as hell.
If they can do it with computer effects, I'd rather somebody not burn to death.
Oh, 100%. That's what I'm saying. They don't need to do it anymore.
Yeah.
But it was still impressive with how, like, basically how they were able to pull that shit off.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's so impressive to me. And I know in some movies, they still do it. Like in Freddy versus Jason, I know a big portion of the burning Jason effect was really, I always forget his name. The guy who played Jason on that one.
Ken Kurzinger?
Yes.
Yes.
He was actually, you know, they actually did do a fire stunt. So I was like, that's pretty cool. But I know he didn't do the full fire stunt. I think he did like just a close up, and then they had a stuntman. He was all pissed off because he was, you know, a stuntman, and they didn't want him to do it because he was their principal actor for Jason. But anyway, fire stunts are cool. So Sal freaks out and tries to leave, but the front door is locked. Angela gets up and starts coming toward him. She's like, leaving so soon? And Sal just scrambles away and runs down the hall. So now we cut to Roger outside in the car asleep. Suddenly the car shifts, waking him up and scaring him.
How did he fall asleep?
I know, right? I would have been terrified. And he just yells out, Stooge, I know it's you, only a fat slob like you can shake the car so much. He looks around, doesn't see anything, looks out the windshield, and suddenly Helen's dead and bloody face flops against the glass, just like what we saw in the mirror earlier. Roger screams and gets out of the car, and then we see dead Helen just kind of laying across the roof. Back to Jay and Linnea, she takes off her panties and tutu and flashes that kitty. And,
Jay... Linnea's giant bush.
Yep.
Again, warping my young brain. I'm about to chime in, Mike. Keep going.
No, see, for me, that, as far as that goes, like, Revenge of the Nerds is what...
Okay.
Open that up for me because I saw that way too young. Late night
Bush.
Oh, Booger's famous line. This is bullshit. I want Bush. Pan down.
Hello, Booger.
that line is burned into my memory. But yeah, she's doing this little, like, you know, dance over to, like, dancey prance over to him. And Jay excitedly gets himself ready, and she sits down on him for a little bit of hibbity-dibbity. And suddenly she goes, why are you looking at me? And she's like, is my makeup okay? And he's like, your makeup's fine. She says it again. He clearly thinks she's nuts. He's like, what are you talking about? What, you know, it's fine. And she's like, stop looking at me. And he's like, what? And then she leans her head back and comes back in a demon face and goes, stop looking at me. He's like,
stop,
oh,
looking at me.
Yes, yes.
You know who that was? That was Frank Welker.
Yep. Well, yeah, Frank Welker. And you can especially hear it when Angela's talking later.
Yep.
It's like, oh, I'm going to get you, Gadget. Like, it was totally Dr. Claw's voice.
That was Frank Welker?
Yeah.
Yep. He didn't get a credit. I don't think he got a credit for the role, but yeah, he did the voice effects for that.
Yep.
For the demon voices.
And that's the thing, like, listen to Dr. Claw and then listen to Angela speak, and it's like, oh shit, it's the same voice. I
totally hear it now.
Yep. But she reaches for him, and you know, he freaks out, grabbing at her hands, and then she fucking thumbs his eyeballs out, and it, oh, it's a spectacular effect, but God, eye trauma in movies, I've mentioned it before, it freaks me the fuck out.
So, here's the end of my story. I didn't know the birds and the bees, so I thought, this is how it works. This is like the mating dance. And I thought, if you weren't doing the sex right, women would turn into monsters and then gouge your eyeballs out.
Oh, they do.
Which, again, I'm not 100% sure that isn't right. I haven't had any evidence to prove me wrong yet. So, if Night of the Demons proved 8-year-old me anything, it's that if you don't know what you're doing, women turn into demons and thumb your eyeballs out and kill you.
I mean, women will thumb your eyeballs out for most anything.
I mean,
especially when you piss them off.
I have a glass eye. I say how I got it, but I think Night of the Demons might be right.
Oh my God. I'm just picturing women now like praying mantises. You know, it's like, don't kiss them wrong. Don't fuck them wrong. They're going to eat your head.
Between this and Salem's Lot 2, Return to Salem's Lot, I was convinced that women were monsters. Like, I was scared shitless of them. So, I'm not going to go on a tangent about Return to Salem's Lot. Just look it up.
Oh, but, yeah.
There's a vampire little girl, so I was like, oh my God, little girls are vampires. And then I thought all women, goth chicks and bimbos in particular, that I got a taste for, thanks Night of the Demons, were going to murder you if you did anything wrong.
Well, and again, going back to the previous stories, like with goth chicks, that's not inaccurate. Like,
so
it's not wrong.
To all the goth chicks listening to Boogeyman's Closet, I'd like to take this moment to say you scare the shit out of me. Okay, Mike, go on.
Yep.
And I want to say, I want to add to this and say, I'm willing to find out if it's true or not.
Yes. For science, Maurice needs to know.
For science, I'm willing to get my eyes gouged out by a goth chick.
I just picture you laying in an ICU unit, bandages over your eyes, smiling, going, worth it.
All right.
You're going to get a visit in the emergency room from Mike and Mike, and we're going to be like, was it true? Did it happen?
Blindly high-fiving us.
Well, I won't be wrong. I mean, I'll be high-fiving a mic. I just don't know which one.
In reality, there's like, a 60-year-old orderly that's like, why is he high-fiving me?
Oh, my God.
And what's worth it? What's he talking about?
He just lost his mind.
She jammed her thumbs in too deep. She's addled his brains. But so we cut to Judy in locked room hearing Jay screaming, and she looks scared. Now we cut to Franny sitting up into frame showing dem titties, and it's like, what was that? Max tells her, oh, it's just more party games, and they continue humping in the coffin. Suddenly,
another stupid thing for me when I was a kid, I just assumed all women's boobs were that, like, gravity-defying and perky.
Yeah.
I didn't make that connection until much, much later that two women in this movie have very, very thick breasts.
Yep. Oh, horror movies, you've lied to us so many times.
I watched as, you know, a dumb, naive tween, probably. I watched Silent Night, Deadly Night. And then I watched Night of the Demons. Like, wow, man, they must have just grown later in life for Linnea. No.
Yeah, no.
And, okay. I keep derailing it for Linnea Quigley.
I honestly fully expected us to be doing that. But yeah, so they continue humping, and then suddenly Stooge walks in, and Max is like, what the fuck, man? Get out of here. And Stooge walks into the light, and we see it's Demon Stooge. He grabs Franny's head and just snaps her neck. She falls on top of Max, who grabs Stooge by the shirt, and Stooge starts slamming the coffin lid down repeatedly on Max's arm while he's screaming until his arm rips off.
Thank you, Stooge. Yep. Somebody needed to teach them a lesson on to have sex in the funeral home.
And so we cut to Roger walking around through the house like he went back in the house after the dead body outside. And Demon Angela pops up behind him saying, welcome back, Roger, scaring the fuck out of him. And it's totally, you know, Dr. Claw at that point. So he runs from her and right into Sal, who has a hammer. I'm like, where did he get a hammer? Because he doesn't have it in the next scene. Like, he just had a hammer randomly.
It's like, he got it from the Hammer Brothers because he's Italian.
He stomped on a turtle, got a hammer.
He went into the sewer that's under the house, borrowed the Hammer Brothers.
Hey, Mario, I got to borrow the hammer.
Do the Mario. Do. Yeah. Thanks, Sal.
He had to dance with Captain Lou Albana to get the hammer. Oh, man. So Roger tries to explain that he just saw Angela, and he tells her, he's like, she was all messed up. And Sal's like, yeah, I know. There's some really weird shit going on here. And then he goes, it's like something happened to Helen. She's dead. And he goes, well, what do you mean? And Roger starts sobbing. He's like, I don't know. So it's like, that doesn't really help, Roger. So Sal shakes him and tells him it's going to be okay. He's like, we just got to get out of here. And then he goes, shh, you got to be quiet, though. And Sal creeps around the corner, like he creeps to the end of the hallway and looks around the corner. And I love this shot because we see Angela glide into frame at the end of the hall, turn and look down the hall toward where Sal is hiding. And then she smiles and glides away down the hall again. Such a cool shot.
Yes.
So we cut to Judy trapped in the room. Stooge is on the other side of the door, pounding on it, trying to get in. She thinks it's Jay, and she's screaming for him to help to get her out. Suddenly, Stooge hears Sal and Roger and heads off to find them, leaving Judy still trapped in the room. So she spent like a good chunk of this movie trapped in that room. Cut to Sal and Roger walking down the halls of the house looking for a way out. All the while, Roger is commenting that they never should have come here and they're never going to get out, which is freaking out Sal. He's like, shut up, Raj. They hear Judy begging for help, and Sal immediately runs to go help her. Roger tries to stop him, protesting, like, how do we know it's really her? Sal ignores this, busts down the door. We pause for effect, and then Judy jumps out into his arms. So we get a little Judy jump scare. Roger looks back down the hall, and this is that scene I was talking about that used to scare the piss out of me. We see Angela gliding down the hall toward him, smiling and growling. Like, that's still creepy looking to me.
She's pissed off that he didn't do the sex right. She's coming to get him.
I love this because this is the first example of Roger being like, fuck my friends, I'm out.
I love this part.
He doesn't say shit. He just looks and runs the other way, just leaving his friends for dead. So Judy's like, Roger, and she looks down the hall, sees Angela coming, and just drops to the floor. It was like she lay there like a slug. It was her only defense. Like, she just fell down. And Sal's trying to get her back up, and she's like, no, I can't. Like, leave me, I'm dead. I give up. She's like the fucking chicken Motel Hell, just, I'm done. But he finally pulls her up and makes her run. I'm like, Judy sucks. So they take off.
I also love characters that, like Sal, you're not supposed to root for the asshole, but right. He gets his moment of being heroic.
Exactly.
Like, in this moment of, like, craziness with angry, horny goth woman tearing everybody apart, it's the asshole that saves you. It's Sal.
Yeah.
Who is, you know, strong under tension.
Yep. He's just a prick the rest of the time.
Yeah, but he's the only one that's smart enough to, well, him and Roger, like, I'm out.
Yeah, Roger's realistic. He's just like, fuck it, I'm gone. But, so they run and hide in a room, and, you know, they slam the door shut. They look around, they see a window without any boards on it, and Sale tries to pry it open. Suddenly, the lights flicker on in the room, revealing that it's the room with Linnea and the now dead Jay. Judy sees Linnea sitting there with Jay's head in her lap. She sees Jay's eyeballs, you know, gouged out. Screams, Sale turns, sees Linnea, and she says, hey, how about an orgy? And she goes, I'm sure if we try hard enough, we can get Jay hard again. I was like, that's fucked up. But Sale tells Judy to run, and then demon Linnea pops up between them. She grabs Judy, Sale grabs Linnea, she backhands him, and he goes flying out the window. Judy opens the door and runs away screaming, and then Linnea leans on the door saying, run, Judy, run! See, Judy, run! And then starts laughing. So, Judy runs down the hall, tries to open up a door, and it yanks shut in her hands. And then all down the hallway, we see the door slamming shut, and behind her, we just see the shadow of Linnea standing there. So, when all the doors close, it kind of leaves Judy in the dark. Now, one door creaks open kind of down the hall. She runs to it and does the horror movie back into the room maneuver. I fucking hate that. Why do they do this in horror movies? Like, you know there's spooky shit everywhere. Why are you going to back into a room without looking? Like, ugh, drives me crazy. So, but it's the coffin room where Franny and Max died. She sees Max's severed arm on the floor, which suddenly lurches to life and grabs her. And she just starts screaming and flailing about. And there's just this very fake arm holding onto her leg. That scene cracks me up every time. And then she just kicks it away and it goes flying.
I'm not holding your hand. Who's holding your hands? It's, yeah.
Exactly. And then behind her, the coffin opens and we see zombified Max and Franny pop up. Judy screams, runs out of the room, and goes upstairs. Cut to Sale waking up in this weird little alcove outside. You know, he's kind of trapped. It was like, I don't even know what that was supposed to be. What did he say? It was an air shaft or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, it was a weird setup. But he wakes up, he looks around, and then he sees a pipe. And he's like, what do you say? Something like, thank God for rusty pipes. Or I don't even remember what he said. But he shimmies up at like a little monkey and climbs onto the roof.
My cousin Mario in there?
We cut back to Judy wandering down the hall. She sees Roger outside on the other side of a door with bars on it, and she goes over to it, and then Demon Stooge jumps in between them. Judy screams and runs. Roger runs as well, and Stooge tries to like pound down the door to get at Roger. So Judy runs downstairs right into Demon Linnea, who roars, making her run back upstairs. And I was like, man, Judy just runs away screaming a lot in this movie, doesn't she? So she winds up in the attic, and we see a door leading out to the roof. She goes out to the roof, looks down, and sees, like, the three-story drop, and then backs back into the attic. She sees Stooge coming up looking for her and quietly backs out onto the roof, where Roger, who's still standing on the little walkway outside, yells for her. She tries to shush him, you know, worried Stooge is going to hear, and then he yells, look out! And she looks over to see Angela, who just goes, enjoying the view, and grabs her by the throat.
You gotta do it right.
I can't do the freak.
I can't even do it because I'm laughing now.
The Frank Welker.
Enjoying the view.
I think we've just discovered your secret talent. The Frank Welker voice.
I should not have been sipping my coffee right then. Oh my God. That was good. So just then, Sale jumps down from higher up on the roof and starts fighting with Angela. Judy tumbles over the edge and is holding on to the edge of the house. Angela grabs Sale and flings them both off the roof to the ground below. Sale is impaled and killed on a fence post. Angela also appears dead for the moment. And Judy is just flailing about hanging over the edge. Roger tries to guide her over to the walkway that he's standing in, which is only like a one, you know, like one floor down versus, you know, a three-story drop. you know, she whines and cries, like, you know, I can't get over there. I can't. And he's like, yes, you can. Just move your ass. So she finally starts, like, wiggling over there. Just then, like, Stooge comes to the, like, comes out onto the roof. Like, I don't know why he took so damn long to walk out there, but walks over there, goes to grab at her. She falls, lands on Roger. Stooge jumps down. Judy and Roger get up and run right into Demon Angela, who tells the, oh, don't tell me you're leaving. Sale wanted to leave, but he decided to stick around. And we pan over to see Sal laying there with the fence post impaled in front of a tombstone that reads, Sal Romero, born December 6, 1970, died tonight.
Tonight, yep.
So they turn and run, dodge Stooge, and head back inside. You know, Angela and Stooge chases after him, sounding just like Dr. Claw. That's where I finally made the Dr. Claw note. They wind up in the crematorium. They close the big metal door, you know, kind of latch it closed, and then start laughing hysterically, which turns into Roger sobbing uncontrollably and Judy trying to convince him they're going to be all right. So Judy looks around. She sees the fucking incinerator and she's like, is that a door? Maybe we could get out that way.
I hate this scene.
Oh my God. Roger tells her, he's like, we should pray first. He goes, my daddy taught me to pray real good. And she goes, I've been praying all night. Now's the time, we gotta go. So she swings the door open and she's like, oh, what is this? There's these pipes and what's this? And she starts digging around in the ashes and finds a human skull, freaks out, slams the door, and tells Roger it's an oven. So she realizes there that they're in the crematorium. Just then, Stooge and Angela start banging on the other side of the door, and they try to convince Roger to give them Judy. They're like, they're like, we just want her. We wouldn't hurt a sweet boy like you.
Sweet Roger.
Sweet Roger. And he's like, or he tells him to go to hell. And this is where she goes, not tonight, in her Frank Welker voice. Cue Maurice.
Not tonight.
I love that.
It's going to be funny every time. So now we get the parlor scene where Judy realizes they won't go to hell until Halloween is over because they don't have to. So they just have to survive until dawn and they'll be okay. Like, you know, she just pulls this out of her ass. Just then Angela calls out. She's like, Judy, I warned you this house was possessed, and starts laughing. And then we see the hinges being like the bolts from the hinges being pushed out from the other side. So Judy realizes they need a weapon while Roger just cowers in the corner. She opens the incinerator and starts yanking on a pipe, finally breaks it free, gas leaks out, and she pulls out Chekhov's lighter. So, haha, that'd come in handy at some point.
She fills the room with gas.
Yep.
The scene is so painfully long.
It takes forever to light that damn lighter. Stooge busts down the door. She lights the gas, uses the pipe as a flamethrower on Stooge and Angela. And this is that Firestone I was talking about. Stooge's head is fucking gigantic. And I know it had to be for the scene. Like, because they obviously had to put something over the actor's face. But, or the stuntman's face. But it's just this, it looks like a mascot Stooge. Like, it's fantastic. It's so
good. I love this scene because then he runs out and falls into the swamp.
Yeah.
It becomes Swamp Stooge.
I was going to say, becomes one of Anton Arcane's minions. Oh, Lord. But yeah, so we get the great fire stunt. So they run off on fire. Judy begs Roger to turn off the gas. He slowly reaches over and does. And suddenly his skeleton arm grabs him out of the incinerator. And he screams and runs, leaving Judy for dead. Suddenly, all the doors around the house begin slamming shut. So Judy runs, finds Roger at the front door. He tells her they can't get out. Suddenly, Eyeless Jay shows up behind Judy. Roger sees him and runs again. He just keeps leaving Angela. Or leaving Judy. Burnt Angela shows up and says, what's the matter, Judy? Don't you like your blind date? Wah, wah. Angela and Jay start coming toward them. And we now see Zombie Sal and Helen are also coming toward them. And Roger goes, "You ain't gonna get me," and just yeets himself out a window.
My God damn, I love Roger because that's the funniest scene. Like, he's just, he's so done at that point. He does what everybody thinks of doing in these movies where they're stuck in the house with the monsters. He throws himself out the window.
And then his reaction, because he, like, he touches at his body and he's like, "I'm not dead. I'm okay." Like, he's all, you know, shocked. Like, he was ready to die at that moment.
Do you want to do a quick callback to Freddy versus Jason? There's like, Freddy tries to kill, like, Shadow Freddy tries to kill somebody in the movie, mm-hmm. and it doesn't work, and he passes his chest, and there's like an ADR line where he goes, "It's all right, I'm okay." Every time I see it, I laugh my ass off.
Oh, I can't wait till we get to that one. That's got so much potential. But so Judy follows him outside and tells him they have to get over the wall. They have to get past the underground stream. Roger tells her the gate is gone and they have to climb the wall. We see some barbed wire hanging down that Roger just uses to fucking climb right up. He's just, he's groaning and screeching, but he fucking climbs up that wire like nothing.
I'm with you, Roger.
Right? He's like, "Fuck it, I'm out." And then we see Burnt Stooge come out running from the, you know, the hole in the wall that Roger made. And Judy starts climbing up the barbed wire, you know, screaming and crying the whole way. Stooge grabs her by the leg, burning her. And then we see the gang's all here. We see Zombie, Jay, Sal, Helen, and Helen, Max, and Franny come wandering out of the house. Demon Linnea and Demon Angela also come wandering out toward where Stooge is. And Roger gets scared and falls off the wall as the others grab and paw at Judy, pulling her down toward them. Roger just, you know, lays on the other side of the wall, cowering, covering his ears. And Judy is about to fall in when suddenly Roger jumps back up on the wall. Like, how the hell did he get up there? That was, like, they needed to climb up the barbed wire on the other side. So how did he get back up from adrenaline, the opposite side of the wall?
Fear.
He just ran clean up the wall. But just as she's about to fall, he gets up on the wall again and grabs her hand. So he starts to yank her up. You know, she's pulling herself. Suddenly Dawn appears. Not D'Orazio. But
hey guys,
she's like, "Hey, movie's got a movie." But Dawn
would show up and just point out, like, "You guys could have just hid somewhere for another 5 minutes, and right. Someone arose, you would have been fine." Idiots.
The gate would have appeared. You wouldn't have had to cut up your hands with barbed wire. But the demons turn into smoke, and then the demon head, like, appears and starts growling and yells at Roger and Judy before being sucked into a void and disappearing. Now we cut to Roger and Judy walking home. It's full morning now. They go past the old man from the night before, who is out getting his newspaper, and he goes, "Rotten pig trash, been out all night, huh? Yeah, you'll all rot in hell." He's such a dick.
No.
Mike, that's you in another 2 or 3 years.
That's me now. Who am I kidding?
There's only one person going to hell after this scene.
Right. He goes back inside. His wife gives him some coffee and apple pie, which he starts eating. I love it because she's like, "How does it taste?" He's like, "Meh." She's like, "You used to love my homemade pies." He's like, "Homemade? When'd you make this? Last night?" And she tells him, "Oh, no, I've been up for hours, and I had to do something with all those leftover apples. We didn't get as many trick-or-treaters as we used to get." And this is where, you know, like, apparently he didn't notice what he was swallowing prior to this.
You took my point. Like, how do you eat a razor blade and not notice?
Right.
Apple's a little crunchy and sharp.
Like, you had to literally just be swallowing it whole, like,
yeah,
not chewing. But he looks horrified. We see veins bulge in his throat and then razors tear out of his neck. And starts bleeding all over the place. Keels over dead. His wife kisses him on the head and says, "Happy Halloween, dear." And then credits roll. The end. Very weird sequence.
It's a good bookend for the movie.
Yeah. Honestly, I kind of...
although it could have had the Texas Chainsaw ending where they're in complete shock and they just walk away.
Right. I mean, I kind of prefer the bookend of the remake where it's the dude getting the world's longest blowjob.
Oh, man, I forgot about that point.
Because it's like the movie is like done and over with. And she's like, "Are you done yet?" He's like, "Not yet." And it, like, literally he'd been getting a blowjob for like 9 hours. It's like that joke is so dumb, but it made me laugh so hard the first time I saw it.
I always get hung up on the point that Edward Furlong is the hero in the movie. And at that point, he was already like, so like the cirrhosis is just apparent on screen. And then it's like, yeah, they're going with Edward Furlong, which I loved.
Oh, I love it so much. He's like, guys, it's demons. We need to run.
Underground stream. And the, yeah, he's just.
It's the iron. Iron and rust will hurt him. He's, oh, God, it's so great. But yeah, so we already mentioned a lot of the trivia, but apparently this was produced for $1.2 million. And over a weekend, over Thanksgiving weekend, it racked up $3.9 million. So, like, just in one weekend. So it really racked up its cash.
Look, I saved up my allowance. I went to the movie a few times. I had a paper route. I did pretty good for myself. But I had to know how to do the sex right so the goth girls wouldn't kill me. I only lost one eye.
You got that one glass eye.
Yep.
Oh, man. Originally, the film was going to be called Halloween Party. You know, I think Night of the Demons works a lot better.
Much better.
But Halloween Party, you know, is still a fun title for a horror movie. And then according to Joe Augustine, the original script contained a gay couple and an interracial kiss, but was deemed too radical by some of the producers as well as the director. Like, that was the time frame. And I'm like, this is one of those things I question. Is this IMDb tomfoolery or is this actually a thing? Because, again, it was the 80s. And the shit that, like, the MPAA or, like, producers and people found to be, oh, we can't do that. That's a bridge too far. Always weirded me out. You know, it's like, we can do crazy shit, but not that.
I guarantee you the MPAA was sent a pie with money underneath it, a la Shawshank Redemption. They did not watch Night of the Demons, because there's no way half the shit in this movie would have made the cut.
Oh, come on. No lipstick nipple?
I don't think so. Call me crazy. Because they might be like, you know, there's like 8-year-olds in Rochester. They're going to watch this and grow up to become demented adults. Maybe you can cut back on a little bit.
Oh, man. Now, one of the things that I saw in the trivia that I never noticed, that I had to go back and check. Now, I always just thought Angela's cross earrings were always upside down. But apparently they're right. Like, she just has cross earrings on prior to becoming possessed. Once she's possessed, they're upside down.
Huh.
I was like, that's kind of cool. I didn't even notice that. I just always assumed, because 9 times out of 10, when I'm looking at like a picture of Angela or like the NECA toy that I have, you know, it's Demon Angela. It's not regular Angela. So it's like,
I'm usually not staring at Angela's ears.
Yeah, right. I mean, that to be fair, I had to draw her once, so I was looking at the whole costume. So,
well,
you know,
good for you.
But the other thing I found hilarious was that Hal Havens refused to show his ass in the mooning scene at the start of the film, which is why he had jack-o'-lantern underwear, because they were going to just have him hang his ass out the window. But he's like, I don't want to show my butt.
He might have, like, pimply ass or something.
That's true.
Like, I'm not going to show anybody my ass crack mohawk. That's staying in my pants.
But it's funny because it's like, I got no problem yelling festering fuckwads, this fucking bitch, like yelling, slapping a girl. Like, yeah, I can do it. I ain't showing my ass, though. Fuck that.
If I ever, he's somebody, if I ever ran into in public, because nobody's going to be like, Hal Havens.
Right.
But if you're a crazy horror fan, I would geek the fuck out.
Oh, yeah. Like,
you know, I've met like Kane Hodder. And it's like, oh, cool, Kane Hodder. Oh, cool, Robert Englund. You don't know who you're going to meet and be like, holy shit. And I think Hal Havens, I'd be like, what? It's Stooge. Like, you're one of my favorite movies, Sorority Babes.
Right? That's exactly. That's one of the things I would bring up immediately.
And I'm sure he'd be like, I have a fan. Wow. You know?
Well, I thought it was funny. Like, I've mentioned this before. When I met Linnea, Like, obviously, you know, I had her sign my copy of Return of the Living Dead, but I was gushing about Sorority Babes, and she was like, wow, you are a fan. Like,
yeah.
So, because
I still haven't been able to compose myself around Linnea Quigley.
She was cool. I really had fun meeting her.
She's super cool, but I wish she didn't sell like nude 8x10s.
Yeah.
She's always got like this gigantic book full of like boob pictures that she'll sign.
Yep.
And then immediately I just get unhinged and I'm like,
what?
Don't poke my eyes out.
I promise I do sex goods.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I gave her some of my artwork and, you know, she was like, she wanted to trade. She was like, cause I was just gifting it to her and she's like, oh no, you got to get an autograph. And I was trying to pay her and she wouldn't take the money. So I ended up getting, I paid for the autograph for my DVD the next day, but she gave me a signed 8x10. And when she was flipping through her binder, she went right to the boob pics and was like, you know, which one do you want? And I'm sitting here like, I can't hang any of those up. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
I just got the picture of her as trash, like, you know, the, like a, portrait. So it was just her head, you know, the whole, like, I like it spooky scene. And, it was so nothing sexual. Cause I'm like, I want to be able to hang this up at some point. And, you know, can't really have that with a kid in the house.
Yep. And I brought this up before, but if you own Scream Queens trading cards and you're thinking about getting married or starting a family, just get rid of them.
Yep.
Put them in a little boat, set them on fire, push them out into the lake. Give them the Viking funeral that they deserve.
Exactly. Send them off to Valhalla. But, well, we should probably wrap this one up since we started so late. But for those of you not following us on social media, we are The Boogeyman's Closet on both Facebook and Instagram. And Maurice handles our Twitter, which is?
At Boogeyman's.
Thank you, Frank Welker.
I don't know why that's so great.
That was good. We're still doing our giveaways. This month was a bit hectic, but we should be back on track with next month. So by the time we start our next round of movies, I'll have the new giveaway up and the August giveaway will be over. But by the time you hear this, you'll still have a little bit of time. So check the social media for your chance to win. We do have a Patreon for anyone interested. It has contains one special Patreon only episode per month, along with all of these episodes completely unedited. For $3, anything above that, any tier above that gets you stuff in the mail. Now I'd like to turn it over to Mike so you can tell us all about Count Creepyhead.
Sure. If you'd like to hear more of Mike and Mike, you can listen to Count Creepyhead's Saturday Morning Monster Mash, where I think it's just a matter of time. We're going to be joined by a very special guest by the name of Sandy Puss, who just sent me Venmo to be our sponsor in a few weeks. So look forward to that as soon as we can get her on the show to do some live reads for commercials. But look for us anywhere you listen to podcasts because we're all over the place. And if you want a good time, we just launched a 3-hour and 25-minute episode. So you can thank me for that later. You're welcome. Also, don't learn the birds and the bees through horror movies because it won't end well.
You'll end up with a glass eye.
Yep.
We will wrap it up here. Our next movie has not been completely decided yet. We're going into September with Whodunit Films. Now, it's looking like our first movie will be either Scream, Saw, Identity, or Club Dread. But the voting is still open, so we'll see if by the time... this airs what we'll actually have running. But check the social media for that. That's how you find out what we'll be watching first. So episode 109 will kick off our Whodunit movies. But Mike, thank you for joining us once again. It's always a pleasure, good sir.
Anytime.
And with that, we'll close this out. So this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
Bye, everybody. Bye. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.